Welcome to the Activation Podcast, brought to you by the Conscious Resistance Network. I'm your host, Derek Brose, and every episode of the Activation Podcast is going to explore solutions that I've written about and that I've talked about through my 10 years as a journalist and an activist, and we're also going to talk with interesting guests who are bringing you the most cutting-edge solutions in the areas of health, permaculture, technology, community organizing, and anything else that we could come across. Thank you for being here with me. Let's get started. Well, I'm excited to bring to you guys a guest that some of you might have heard me talk to before. Mike Swiatek is involved with MidFest, which is a kind of anarchist, decentralized campout gathering. We'll hear more about that. He also runs Agoras.market, which is another great resource we'll chat about. And we've talked about these topics in the past, but today we're going to be focusing on Mike's work in the area of Web3 solutions, decentralized internet, and so much more. So thank you for joining me today.
My pleasure.
Well, let's go ahead and dive right in. Let's start with the most basic question. How do you define Web3? Like, what makes a project Web3, or sort of looking at, you know, this next version of the internet? How do you define that?
Okay, the way I look at Web3 is as a totally distributed solution where you're not dealing with any particular gateways or nodes that your communications have to go through. The traffic can pass through any number of paths, so it makes it almost unstoppable.
Awesome. So let's talk more about the specifics of that. Okay, so we're talking about decentralized and distributed. I've heard you use these terms. Let's start there as well. Let's define some of those terms before we dive deeper into some of the actual tools. What makes the difference between, say, let's start with centralized, the World Wide Web, and a decentralized internet? Let's start there, and then we'll talk about the difference between decentralized and distributed.
Okay, centralized is like a typical website. It is provided by a server someplace, and all the access to that content comes from that particular server. So if anything happens to your ability to access that one server, you lose access to all of the content from it. Now, decentralized solutions, instead of having one server, you may have a few or several, but not a lot. And so you have a situation where your content may have to go through two or three hubs before it gets to you, but it's still routed through a few distinct nodes. And it wouldn't be that difficult for state actors to take out all those nodes and deny you access to content on a platform like Element, for example, which is also called a federated network. But decentralized and federated, they're essentially the same, where they operate through a few nodes, and it's not that difficult for those few nodes to be taken out.
Okay, and so before we talk about distributed, you know, the main difference, I think, and the benefit of decentralized versus centralized is that there's no central point of failure. Like you were just saying, there still are some weak points. You know, you could still have multiple nodes attacked, but generally decentralized is going to, get rid of that central point of failure, correct?
Right. Yes. It does give you multiple points, so that it would have to be a concerted attack on all of them to affect, stopping it.
Okay, so now let's talk about what makes something that is distributed better or more secure than something that is only decentralized.
Okay, a distributed network, if you imagine a big mesh, and that mesh has you connected directly to many other nodes, and so your communication path isn't toward a single server or a particular hub. It's toward any number of peers, is what they call them. Like on IPFS, it's not unusual for me to be connected with 200 peers, and each of them may be connected with hundreds of peers. So you have this huge, very complex mesh. The information you're requesting from the source has any number of paths to get there. And also on its way to you, it drops off copies of itself along the way, which makes it even more unstoppable. So it's a very, very robust and difficult to stop.
Okay, and you mentioned IPFS as one example of distributed, correct?
Right.
Okay, so let's talk about that, because I know that a lot of the audience that's going to be coming to this podcast is going to be some folks who aren't, you know, tech savvy, crypto savvy, encryption savvy, or Web3 savvy, definitely. So I want to make sure we're able to define these terms and these ideas for people as we go through them. I guess as we're talking about distributed, we are going to get to, you know, I want to pick your brain about some of your favorite Web3 tools and projects that you see coming up. But let's talk about IPFS first. First of all, of course, what is that? What does IPFS stand for? And obviously, it's a distributed network of some kind, but what is it exactly?
Okay, the acronym IPFS stands for Interplanetary File System. And it's a huge decentralized network all over the world where you store files, basically. And those files get copied onto other nodes and people's computers all over the place. So it's just very spread out. You may not access the same content from the same place twice. So IPFS is built basically as a file storage system.
So what type of files could IPFS hold? I mean, you know, websites, I know that, like, but is it like storage, like something like Dropbox? Like how would somebody think about this in terms of storing files, like specifically just websites or all kinds of different data?
It can be anything. It can be database data. It could be a website. It can be a video or an audio or a text file, any kind of file that you have on a computer anywhere can be put on there. Now, there is a more recent extension, I guess, of the IPFS system called the Interplanetary Name System. And the thing about an IPFS item is, if I publish a website to IPFS and then I change any little thing anywhere in the entire website, the parent address changes. The IPFS address changes because it's no longer the same. But with the IPNS system, you establish a static, unchanging hash or address to that website, which it's going to be always there. Even if the content under it changes, when the publisher publishes, they just publish the new IPFS hash to that static IPNS hash, and that becomes the address where you always go for whatever website you're going to. And it's like a domain name, except that, you know, it's not hosted on any server. You don't have to pay for it. You know, it's all free. And, you know, so it's a really strong system. I've got four websites I've put on it, and there are so far only three others that I know about.
Yeah, so there's seven or eight websites on the IPFS network at the moment?
Right, yes. The most recent one is the Highwire, Dell Begtree's website. Ernest Hancock put out a bounty for somebody to put that on IPFS within a day, and he had a taker. There was a guy who had it on IPFS within a day, and then another fellow published it to an IPNS hash, so it'll always be there. And now they can edit it, make changes, whatever, and you still go to the same address.
Okay, well, so before we get too much further into the weeds, Mike, I do want to just pause here to acknowledge that, because I know for some people they're hearing IPFS, IPNS, you know, and they might already be lost, right? But you have actually put together a pretty helpful guide on how to add websites to the IPFS network. Is that correct?
Right. And in fact, I just did some major improvements to that so that now it can support WordPress websites, Drupal, Joomla, all of those. And also we've simplified the process while doing that. So that's kind of nice, more capability and less complexity. And in fact, this morning I was just working on a one button ability to publish, which will make it really simple for people.
Awesome. And I will definitely include for everybody listening to the podcast in the description, wherever you're watching or listening from, we'll put the links to Mike's guides on that. Because I think those are really helpful, because For me, I do support, obviously, those who know my work, distributed decentralized systems. I think this is the wave of the future. And also, it's a more secure, more private. These are things we should all pursue. But there are going to be people who this seems like a little bit overwhelming, who might support it in theory, but kind of stumble when it comes to the technical aspect. So we're going to make sure to include that information. I did have one other question on IPFS before we move forward. So when you describe like the changes that, you know, and how the change to the website can affect, you know, the current version of the website, if I'm to put, for example, theconsciousresistance.com on there, is the version that will be on IPFS, is that immediately updated when the other one is, or is it a static website of that place and time? And, you know, like, for example, like, do things like videos play? Like, can you answer some of those questions?
It is like a static website. It takes dynamic websites like WordPress, converts them to a static HTML website, but it has all the functionality that's available within the files and folders you've put on there. So if you update and add another episode like this one, then you'll need to do an update also to your IPFS. It isn't going to happen automatically, but we're working to make it just as simple as possible.
Okay, great. Yeah, I've been curious about that myself. So, okay, let's talk a little bit more, Mike. What other projects are on your mind? Clearly, IPFS is something I've seen you talk about, and you have the guide we just mentioned. But what are some of the other projects that you see in the Web3 space as either really exciting to you or things that are going to be essential that people should maybe start checking out now?
Well, right now, I consider anything that we have available to be essential because, you know, it's possible that the powers that shouldn't be might turn off all the domain names tomorrow, and then there will be no more access anymore to Conscious Resistance or any website. It's really not that hard to happen. So that's why these decentralized platforms are so important. And one that's already up and has a lot of traffic is LBRY. Now, LBRY, there are several different ways you can access it, but it's a fully distributed solution with this huge nodal network. Whenever you have a LBRY app running on your phone or on your PC, you're like a node. You're a participant in this distributed network. Now, most people access LBRY through lbry.tv or odyssey.com, and that's fine. But you need to understand that when you do that, you're going through a website address, a domain name, and that is a centralized point. So if they turn off lbry.tv, and that's where you normally access LBRY, well, if you don't have the app, you're going to lose complete access to LBRY because you're going through a centralized gateway. And so that's why it's so important that people use the apps. Don't just go through the websites, because if you don't have the app and then they turn everything off, you're going to lose your access to LBRY, and you might find it difficult even getting the app after that.
So just to kind of reiterate that, so if somebody, as you said, is used to visiting library.tv or odyssey.com to check out, you know, maybe these interviews or maybe the folks who follow here, you've been watching the Greater Reset videos, going to odyssey.com, as opposed to either downloading the app to their desktop or to their phone, then if there was an attack, as you said, on the www address, odyssey.com, their access, they would assume, okay, the website's down, it's gone. But if they did have the app downloaded on their own device, then they could still access that network and all that data, all the videos, et cetera, that are on there. Is that correct?
Right. And likewise for publishers, if you're used to publishing through the website, if you instead publish through the app, you don't have to worry about losing access for publishing as well.
Okay, great. Yeah, I didn't know that. I mean, I use Odyssey.com and library regularly, but I understand it as an concept, but I hadn't really thought about it in that way. And that's a great idea to know. Those who've paid attention to the Greater Reset activation we had a couple months ago, you heard us speak with Jeremy Kaufman, the CEO of library/Odyssey, and what the work they're trying to do there. So that's another great tool, because obviously, you know, we're talking about IPFS storing websites and data. but people want to be able to share videos and watch video content, but they know increasingly places like YouTube and those places aren't safe for them as far as being able to get the full picture, the information that they want. And there's the threat of these sites, like, for example, what happened with Parler, like having Amazon hosting and having that removed. Is there anything as far as like when it comes to hosting in the Web3 space that is being developed so that, I mean, obviously, I guess IPFS is one of those solutions, and I've heard of unstoppable domains and things like that sort. But are those the kind of basic solutions for preventing people's servers from being taken down, or is that a different solution?
Unstoppable domains is a different solution. They're basically trying to provide domains that you can access, but you have to have a different domain name server or internet phone book to use that. Now the other project, DWeb, you know, I like the look of where it's headed, but it's just not ready yet. I kind of keep my thumb on the pulse of that one. I've put a website on it, but they haven't arrived at the point yet where I'm able to revise that website. The other thing is they need to provide access to the content that doesn't go through a single gateway like dweb.link. See, that's one of the issues with the Brave browser's IPFS integration is it forces you through the dweb.link gateway. So you're not really getting the full benefit of the IPFS system when you install it or use it that way. Instead, there's another way that you should do, which you can find at agorist.market. Just go to the menu bar, click on IPFS. You'll find instructions on how to set up your browser to be able to access IPFS reliably. And also you'll find a directory there of the IPFS websites that are out there, all eight of them.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to working with you to make the Conscious Resistance and the Greater Reset the next sites that get added to IPFS. Are there any other Web3 projects that are sticking out to you? I don't know if this would qualify as Web3 or if there's anything in that space, but let's talk maybe about the next generation or the Web3 version of messaging platforms. I mean, this has been a conversation that I'm sure you notice has become really, really topical right now. People concerned about obviously knowing that Facebook Messenger, Instagram, those sort of mainstream platforms aren't safe. People curious and interested in things like Signal and Telegram, Session. I mean, I've been hearing a lot of these different names. What are the messaging platforms that you think are kind of on the cutting edge and provide the most security and the most functionality for somebody who's used to the mainstream platforms?
Okay, for distributed solutions that use the mesh type network or the, you know, mesh oriented network, there really are three that I know of, and one of them I didn't know about until you mentioned it. And that's Tox Instant Messaging. It's at Tox, T-O-X dot chat. I haven't played with that one yet. I read the FAQ, looked it over. It sounds promising. I'm going to definitely check it out some more. Two that I am familiar with, though, are, first of all, Briar, which is a secure messaging app. And also, it has a meshnet capability. So, like, if the internet's down, you can communicate between, you know, peer-to-peer-to-peer through a mesh network of individuals who have Wi-Fi or Bluetooth connectivity with each other, or maybe they have a router set up so that they can communicate with each other through a router that's not connected to the internet. So, you know, Briar's a good solution. I like it. It's probably its only real weakness is that it's only available on Android. There is a Briar patch that you can use to get it to run on Linux, if you know where to find that. But the platform limitations are probably the biggest downside on Briar. But aside from that, you know, I really like Briar. I use it. I've got connections and groups on there, and it's good, and it's secure, and it's distributed. The third one you mentioned, Session, it's also very good. It has a lot of similarities with Briar, but it's also available on more platforms. You can put it on Apple, Android, Linux, Windows, whatever. It's on all of them. They had a group size limitation that was rather low until recently. They've bumped it up to 100, I think it is, which isn't huge. But if you've got a group like a Freedom Cell and you want to have some good private communications, that's a good tool, you know, for a group that size, you know. So I really like Session, and really of all of them, that's the one I probably use the most. I really like it.
Okay, great. And I will include links to all of those in the description for people who want to check them out. Talks, Session, and Briar. I've heard of those three. Talk a little bit about whatever knowledge or experience you have about Signal, because obviously Signal has become kind of, I think, the almost mainstream encrypted platform, you know, go-to choice for a lot of people. It's promoted by Edward Snowden and lots of mainstream folks. I've also recommend anybody who hasn't looked into this to check out the work of Yasha Levine, particularly his book Surveillance Valley. And in that book and in some of his recent blogs, he does point out some things that he says are kind of worrisome about the founder, the hacker involved who's in the founding of Open Whisper Systems and the Signal Protocol, and just some concerns that he has about funding in relation to the NSA and other things. So I think that there might be reasons for pause or at least like deeper research, but what are your thoughts on Signal?
Well, I look at these things more than anything and how reliable are they? You know, how easy is it for the powers that be to just turn it off, you know? And Signal's a centralized platform. I mean, you just got one point of attack there and it's gone. So if you're relying on Signal for private communications with your friends and they decide one day, well, we're going to turn that off, well, it's gone, you know, whereas they can't do that with Session. They can't do that with Briar. It looks like they probably can't do it with Talks. So that's the big strength right there. And they are, you know, encrypted, you know, private messaging services, you know, so they still have those features.
Hold that thought. Guys, before we go any further, I want to tell you a little bit about a project that I recently launched called the Holistic Self-Assessment Online Course. Now, some of you know that I released this book, The Holistic Self-Assessment, in April 2018. And essentially, this book is the culmination of the experiences I had when I went to prison, dealing with addiction, dealing with depression, and suicide attempts. This is the process that I took myself through to get to know who I am, to get to know my principles, to get to align my relationships, my words, my thoughts, and actions with those principles. Overall, it's meant to be a self-empowerment, self-help guide that can help you start accomplishing your goals by aligning your principles with your actions. The book is available to download for free, and I'll include that link below. But if you're interested, I did recently launch a new online course, which you can find on the University of Reason, aka Autonomy. I partnered with them recently, and they created this whole online course for me. It's 9 weeks long. You can watch and follow along and read the book as I go through each chapter. I read it with you, and I offer some tips and some exercises. There are two different options. You can either do DIY, where you just go through the 9-week course yourself, or if you want to have personal one-on-one sessions with me, there's also an option for that. So check that out, guys. I'll include both links below. Let's get back to the podcast.
So even out of any potential concerns about the NSA or the levels of encryption, I think you bring up a good point. Like we started the conversation about the difference between centralized and decentralized and the difference between decentralized and distributed. So that is a great point. Even if Signal offers the best encryption available, or if it does live up to all of its claims, that ultimately if it's centralized on these servers, then it is a weak point. So something right to consider. Okay, so now we've talked about, you know, IPFS and DWeb and some of the decentralized web tools. We're talking now about the messaging platforms. Have you been able to look into any of the research lately? I spent last night, you know, looking up a few different items, but some of these new, again, encrypted, potentially distributed networks as far as the servers and the communication goes when it comes to cell phones, when it comes to smartphones. You know, I've heard of most recently, you know, things like the Pine phone, the Fairphone. I've heard of people getting the Pixel phone, Google Pixel phone, and de-Googling it if you really trust that. And then, you know, kind of adding their own operating system, a Linux operating system. And then there's services like the Purism phone, the Librem 5. Do you have any experience with any of those or any thoughts on that? Because I do know that much of our audience is also starting to not only think about how do I get off of Microsoft, how do I get off of the mainstream internet, how do I get off of these social media platforms, but how they can continue to use phones and devices that maybe aren't, you know, part of that system and are more secure and private.
Yeah, and that doesn't really have so much to do with whether it's a distributed network so much as privacy. And probably the guy I think people can learn the most from about that is a guy named Robert Braxman. And he's on LBRY. It's Braxman. And he has a lot of great information there. He does de-Googled phones. He does his own VPN service and VPN routers. And I've learned a lot from him. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, most people don't know it, but they actually turned off the VPN services in the United States for the most part for just a few days. It was like some kind of a test. But if you think that your VPN is going to be the answer for being able to communicate, and now it appears that the Great Wall of China, where they do this kind of stuff all the time, is already set up and waiting to be used in the United States. So, you know, security is a big topic. That episode with the VPNs really upset Robert. He did a really great video on that a week or two back. But the phones, I really haven't gotten into that much.
So Robert Braxman, you said, I'll make sure to include his link as well. So that would be a good resource.
Yeah, you might interview him sometime too. He does interviews. He'd be a great one.
Cool. Well, we'll bring him on the podcast and we can talk more about the phone discussion. So let's talk any other Web3 projects that are out there that are appealing to you. And again, maybe we could kind of distinguish to help people understand further. What is going to be the major difference? I guess it's the distributed, decentralized nature, but and privacy and things like that, of what we imagine Web3 sites looking like compared to just the World Wide Web.
Well, Web3 sites are going to look a whole lot like what you're used to on the World Wide Web, except you just access it a little differently. Now, the address you're going to see up in the bar instead of something recognizable is going to be some long hash that you won't remember, but you just bookmark it, and that takes care of that. But, you know, the thing I've been trying to do the most is create a feeling of a sense of urgency, if you will, because most people don't realize how important this could end up being to them. Because, you know, the internet has a thing called the domain name servers, the DNS system. It's basically the phone book for the internet. And so when you enter in theconsciousresistance.com and go to that website, it is actually taking you to an IP address, which is a series of numbers like 1.2.3, you know, there's 4 or 6 numbers depending on how it's set up. But it's taking you to an address that's a bunch of numbers that you don't know. In fact, there's only a few websites like Ice Age Farmer and James Corbett that even have a static address like that, the numbers you can just go to. But any of those web addresses that you're used to going to, those domain names, I'm sure they have a list of those. And I'm sure they have a switch set up. And one day they're just going to flip that thing. You're going to wake up the next morning and you're not going to have access to any of the content that you had gone to before, unless it happens to be on IPFS, or maybe when D-Web's ready, or maybe it's on LBRY, some content there. But you're going to lose all that stuff you access through the internet. And if you're used to going to LBRY through their domains, LBRY.tv and Odyssey.com, you're going to lose that. So think about it. Think about how little access to information that you can believe you're going to have after that happens. And that's why this is so important, that people learn how to access websites on IPFS, that website owners get their websites on IPFS, that everybody learns how to get their app set up for LBRY. And then, you know, then at least we can maintain communications. Use Briar or Session, you know, this is really important.
Mike, so tell me a little bit about the last thing you were just saying there. So for one, I definitely am interested in making sure to get my, I've seen Christian Ice Age Farmer have his where, you know, you've got the actual address, not just the www. How would myself as, you know, a website owner, a content creator, and anybody in the audience listening, two things. How do you go about getting your website? Like, is that just through going through IPFS? Is that what you're describing? Or is that a different process to make sure you have your actual, you know, domain? And then for the audience, where do they find those addresses to make sure that they can still have access? Like, obviously, Christian on Ice Age Farmer, he has a post on his website that says, hey, here's the direct link. So would it just be a matter of content creators such as myself just putting that information out there and then the viewers making sure to bookmark those sites, as you were saying? Or is there kind of an easier way to go get that information out to the public?
Well, because these addresses are not memorable, yeah, they're going to have to be bookmarked. And putting your website out there, you don't have to have a server. You don't have anything like a domain name you buy. It's totally free. All you got to do is know how to do it, have a computer that you can dedicate to it, and then go through the steps, you know. And I've got the steps essentially already lined out, you know. I've done it. I've put four websites out on it myself already, my own websites. But anybody can do what I've done. It's just now a matter of making it user-friendly. And that's where we're at right now. And, you know, I'm excited. You know, we got the big Dell Big Tree and the High Wire on there. You know, I'd love to see the Conscious Resistance be one of the next ones, you know, because, you know, this needs to happen. People need to have access to, you know, content. And I know you do a lot of great articles and stuff, you know, and those aren't on LBRY. So you need a way to be able to keep that accessible, you know, when, you know, if they decide to turn off the domains.
Oh, exactly. So just that's a good point there. And it gives me one more question before we start to wrap up. So let's say, like, I did want to save one of my articles, right? And one of the ways people save things at the moment is they go to archive.org, you know, the Wayback Machine, and they might save something on there. But again, not only has recently the Wayback Machine started to indicate that they will be removing websites and saves that they believe are disinformation, misinformation, but I'm going to assume that they are operating on centralized servers as well. So ultimately, that's not really a long-term solution. So then could I just take like a single article and add that on IPFS as well? Like in the way that I, you know, obviously it would be a different process, but in the same sense that I save it on archive.org, like I save it on IPFS and there's an address I can share with people and it's going to be preserved there.
Absolutely. Yeah. You just upload it to IPFS. It'll generate a new hash for that particular file, and then you give people the link to that file. The more people access it, the faster it'll be. Now, that's one thing about IPFS. IPFS in particular is when you first put a new video out there, the first person or two that accesses it, the access may be slow. It may take it a little while to find it. But after that first person finds it, it leaves pieces of itself all along the trail between you and the source. And now when other people decide to access it, not only are they getting it from you, they're also getting it from all these bits and pieces that are scattered, and they're leaving trails. And so after a little while, you got this thing scattered all over the place. It gets faster. It's unstoppable. And, you know, that's just how the system works. The more it's accessed, the faster it gets.
Wonderful. Truly distributed. Well, man, this has been a great conversation, Mike. I definitely want to have you back on and, you know, just continue this ongoing conversation, because when I put out first announcing that I'm going to do the Activation podcast, you know, tech is one of the big sides that people are like, okay, this is something I can start taking practical steps to do. And, you know, in addition to doing other things, and I know there's a big interest in this, and perhaps maybe we can do a competition. Everybody hearing this podcast, when we release it, get in touch with Mike, get in touch with me. Let's see how many websites between now, when we're recording this in early March, and the end of May, when we have the next greater reset activation, how many sites can we have on IPFS? I think that would be really beautiful to get it past the hundreds and have just more and more people using that. Because as you said, that's how these things are going to grow. We need people to actually, the best ideas and best tools, if they're sitting on the shelf not being used, then they really don't matter. But if we make use of them, we can do something wonderful. So before we go, let's talk a little bit about your projects. I mean, first off, most related to this conversation, you've launched the Web3 podcast. Tell us a little bit about that.
Right. Yeah. It's Web3 only, web number 3 only. You'll find that if you go to @Web3 only on both LBRY. Also, there's a Telegram channel, and there you'll find links to the podcasts and show notes and stuff like that. But those are the easiest ways to access it. Once you do get to the Web3 only website, which is only on Web3 on IPFS, you can bookmark that. You'll find on agorist.market, if you click IPFS in the menu bar, it'll tell you how to get set up accessing content directly through the nodal network on IPFS. But also there's a directory there, or a link to the directory of IPFS websites, and that also takes you to the Web3 only website on IPFS.
Awesome. And I will definitely include all those links below. Tell us a little bit about the agorist.market website. We've mentioned it a few times, how that works, and then about MidFest.
Yeah, agorist.market, man, it has just taken off. We've got about, 170 businesses now that are listed on there. All kinds of things. Up in the menu bar, if you select categories, you'll see all the different types of stuff. And these are all agorists. I mean, these are people accepting payments outside the banking system. You know, people like you and me who are just trying to, you know, break free from the system, you know. And so if you've got a business and you want to list there and you accept payments outside of the system and you're not hurting anybody, abiding by the non-aggression principle, then you can list your business for free. And all the website does is connect buyers with sellers, you know. It's not involved in the transactions. We don't even know what you're doing or anything. You know, you just contact whoever it is. It's got what you want and it's between you. And so it's really nice. It's working out well. I've heard a lot of positive feedback on what it's done for people's businesses. So yeah, it's good stuff.
All right. Tell us a little bit about MidFest. I mean, I know you've been Mid-Continent Liberty Festival is one of the many kind of freedom fests that have been popping up in the last couple of years. And you're the initiator of this. Tell us a little bit about it. I know you have one coming up.
Right. Yes. It's the website is midfest.info, and that's for the Mid-Continent Liberty Festival. It's coming up the weekend. We say the peak weekend is the 17th and 18th of April, but people start showing up early, maybe a week early. They stay however long, you know, like Jackalope Freedom Festival out in Arizona. I think there were people there a month afterward last time, you know. So it's just whenever people want to show up, whenever people want to leave. But there's that peak weekend that we kind of point to and say, yeah, this is probably when it's going to be the most interesting, you know. You'll probably want to be there for that. And it's just it's an unorganized, non-event, spontaneous order. Whatever happens, happens. Nobody's in charge. I mean, I just put a website out there, found a place with a kindred spirit to have it at. And then just turn it loose into the wild, you know. And it looks like it's going to be a lot bigger this time. The last one was the first one in October. It wasn't huge, but, you know, what we might have lacked in numbers, we made up for in enthusiasm. And this time we're going to have numbers too. So it's going to be really cool. Looking forward to it.
Awesome, Mike. Thank you so much again for sharing your knowledge with us. And I will include your IPFS guide on how to get more websites out there so we can start that process. And then I'll be getting with you on doing that for my sites and we'll continue the conversation. I definitely recommend everybody to check out Mike's work. Any last words you'd like to share?
You know, everybody just do stuff. You know, I hear so many people talking about this problem and that problem and worrying about this and worrying about that. And, you know, if all you focus on is the problems, you're going to be worried. But if you focus on doing stuff, solutions, I mean, whatever you can do, just do it. You know, you'll feel better. You know, it's so much positive energy that, you know, I can't hardly encourage people enough to do stuff.
Hey, thank you so much, Mike. I appreciate that. All right, everybody. You've been listening to the Activation Podcast. We just talked with Mike Swiatek of agorist.market, of Web3 Only Podcast, of MidFest. So much information. All of that will be included in the description for you wherever you're watching. And I appreciate you guys being here. Remember, this podcast is aimed at bringing you solutions, talking about how we can take care of ourselves and build a better world. So until next time, remember, you are powerful, you are beautiful, and you are free. Thank you.